Challengers, Fall Guy, Abigail, The Usual Suspects, Alien. These are just some of the movies we'll be discussing in this special episode of Letterboxd Recap. What's up, movie friends? Welcome back to Raiders of the Lost Podcast, the ultimate film and TV podcast. And this is the episode where we go through the movies we've been watching this past week, as well as rating the Letterboxd top 4 of 5 of you listeners. And before we continue, we want to let you all know that we are making a new movie. It's called One Click, and we're currently looking for investment and fundraising on Indiegogo. We'll put a link to the Indiegogo page in the description of this episode. There are all kinds of perks that you can get with your donation. You can do a custom amount, but we have some sick perks, like you can be a guest on the podcast. You can be on set for when we set a car off and blow it up. There'll be 3 people who can come to set for that. You can be an executive producer. You can be a guest on set for the days that we don't blow up a car. You can also get a prop from the movie, a custom hat, an early access digital copy of the script, Zoom call with us, personalized thank you videos. So go to the Indiegogo page to help us raise funds for this movie, as well as if you don't want one of those perks, just put any amount you want into the campaign. Thank you so much to everyone who has donated already. We are almost at 19% of our fundraiser right now, but we still have 80% left to go to our 30 backers already. Thank you so much to everyone who's claimed those perks and prizes. We appreciate it so much, but there are so many perks left to claim. Get them before they are all out. James, how has your movie watching journey been this past week?
I've been busy, but I got 3 bangers in. Last night, I went to another early screening of The Fall Guy.
How was it?
And I'm fucking telling you guys, my second favorite movie of the year.
Wow.
My second favorite movie of the year.
High praise.
Obviously behind Dune Part 2. I love this film. I liked it the second time even more than the first. I had an absolute blast. It's just a blast from the past. I might as well just keep going on this tangent.
Yeah, man.
I have so much fun with this film. The soundtrack is great. The filmmaking's terrific. Awesome, awesome, awesome stunts. If anyone's ever been on a set before or does stunts or is an actor, PA, director, AD, sound guy, whatever, you will love this movie. This movie's made for you, but it's also entertaining. Stunts are the backdrop. The story is excellent. It's really fun. It's hysterical. Gosling and Blunt are so good together, and I was excited because I took 2 stunt friends to see it, and they fucking loved it, and it was just a love letter, calling card to that industry of performers who are just in the shadows of the movie world for so long, and finally it's kind of sort of a big coming out party, I think, for that part of the industry. And it's beyond fun, guys. I can't wait for you all to check this out. I've been hyping it up for so long, but it's an absolute blast. And it's a classic action flick. It feels like an old action TV show or an action movie from the 90s. The movies we grew up loving. And there's a great love story. There's a great romance story in there too, which I miss so much in cinema. In the most blockbusters, we got that great
boobs
love
and
story.
Yeah. No more boobs and romance.
Boobs and romance are gone from cinema, but not with the Fall Guy. Romance is back, and
no boobs, though.
Yeah, I felt really connected to the love story. And you know, I do miss this style of movie, and I think that's what David Leitch made with this movie. It's a love letter to the movies that he loves, and it's so fun, guys.
I gotta agree. It's a really fun time. It's really entertaining. It's funny. It's light. It's got great action. A cool stunts that you've never seen before. Gosling really gave it his all. Emily Blunt's amazing, as always. The rest of the cast is great. What was your rating out of 5 on that?
Four and a half.
Wow. Up from your first watch.
It's up a half a star. You liked it even better. Bro, the second time is even better. It was such a good time.
I rated it 4 stars on my watch. I really enjoyed The Fall Guy.
Soundtrack is so good, too. The main song, it's a song from Kiss.
Which one?
I Was Made for Loving You.
Oh, gotcha.
I was made for loving you, baby. It's
Oh, that's
perfect.
Kiss.
Yeah, it's Kiss. It's the theme of the movie, basically. It plays multiple times, but I cannot wait for people to check this out. It's got really great filmmaking, too. I mean, there's some...
Shot on film.
Shot on film, but there are some really interesting oneers in this movie. It opens with a 4-minute oneer.
It's great
which
opening.
Which is terrific. But then there are a couple of other very long oneers or kind of short oneers, like maybe 20 seconds, 30 seconds. But it's really great filmmaking, and I just really, really love this movie.
We'll be doing a full episode on it with a special guest next week, so stay tuned for that.
Unfortunately, it's not Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, it's not Ryan Gosling, but it is Emily Blunt. I'm just kidding. Next up, I watched Challengers. Everybody's talking about this film from Luca Guadagnino. I give this movie a 4.5-star rating. It is fantastic. It's phenomenal. I wrote, playing tennis equals having sex.
Luca Guadagnino crafted one of the most unique and original sports films in years, oozing with sensuality and drama. Incredible cinematography and editing keep the sequences fresh and exciting while we're bounced around in a revolving story structure. The cast is really exciting to watch together, and each actor brought multiple layers and were able to explore various ages of each role. This film, I don't want to give too much away for those who haven't seen it. It's really exciting. It's really well done. And ironically, it's a tennis movie, but it's not really about tennis, ultimately. It's about the trio. It's about this, this, I wouldn't say a love triangle, but it is a triangle. And it's intense. It's dramatic. It's really, really interesting. All the performers are fantastic. And the story takes place over many years, so you get to see the actors age. And all three of them did a phenomenal job bring idiosyncrasies and layers to each age they played their roles in. Zendaya is fantastic as always, and the other two, Mike Faced and Josh O'Connell, are phenomenal. I haven't seen Josh O'Connell act in anything, but Mike Faced he played Riff in the Spielberg musical. It's escaping me right now.
West
Side Story. He's great in that film, and he's excellent in this one. This movie's more about it's actually more about sex than it is sports, and it's not really there's not that much sex in it. And Guadagnino, I don't want to spoil it, but he uses the sport as a parallel and a metaphor for intimacy in a really cool way. And the way he shot the tennis scenes, it's not what you would expect. It's not like a sports drama. You know, it's more about the characters than it is about what's happening on the court. And so he's using the court as, like, in my opinion, like a way of showing relationships between the people. And it's really exciting. Zendaya plays a really cool character. She's not very likable. In some ways, because she's extremely controlling and dominating, but it really works because she's and it's in the trailer. You see her have her injury in the trailer. It's not a spoiler. Without tennis, she's the ultimate competitor. So without tennis, she brings that fierceness and that competitive nature to her relationships in her life. And she did a fantastic job bringing that in. Also, incredible score from Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. It's fantastic. Suits the film perfectly. Some really great themes. And ultimately, I had a really fun time. Inventive camera work. Great shooting on film. 35mm. Looks beautiful. One of the best looking films by far this year so far. I really adored the film.
I'm going to try to find time to watch it this week, but I have three movie screenings that I have to do this week. I'm seeing Ungentlemanly Warfare. We're seeing Furiosa. And we're also seeing Apes. So there's a lot of movies to be seen the next several days. And then you're gone.
I'm gone.
I'll probably go see Challengers. Not early this week, but maybe the end of next week. I really want to check it out.
It's doing really well.
Yeah, it's the number one movie at the box office. The number one movie in the world right now.
And really well received from critics and audiences alike. I think you're really going to like it, honestly.
Hell yeah, I can't wait. Now, Anthony, can we get to one of my favorite parts of the week is when we review the four favorite films on Letterboxd of five of our listeners. If you want to participate in this and hear your Letterboxd favorites, just screenshot us your Letterboxd account on Instagram direct messenger. We'll add you to our massive list and get to you eventually. Do five an episode on Letterboxd. And now let's get into that segment of the show, Anthony. Let's go.
Take it away. First up, we got Lenny. What's up, Lenny?
Top
four is Iron Man. Catch Me If You Can.
That's what I'm talking about.
Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets.
Oh, Lenny!
Jimmy!
That was a Goodfellas reference.
Jimmy! Anytime someone says Chambers is their favorite, James just loses it.
My guy.
And Jurassic Park.
Lenny is a
film boy!
Film boy.
Recently, Lenny has watched Couples Retreat, Wedding Crashers, Coraline, and Disney's Haunted Mansion.
Interesting week of movies.
Coraline is fantastic.
Coraline is terrific. It really is.
I watched it for the first time this year.
Yeah, we did a Patreon bonus review of it. It was really great.
Really.
I really enjoyed the
I felt dumb for not having watched it before.
It's a really brilliant story.
It's genius. Thank you so much, Lenny. All right, next up we got Sosa, all the way in New York City, stoned film junkie. Sounds like me at 18.
And Guitar Hero.
Yeah. All right, Sosa's top four are Old Boy.
Hell yeah.
Requiem for a Dream.
Requiem for a Dream. Love to hear it.
Enter the Void.
That's what I'm talking about.
Gaspar Noé. And then Death Proof.
Film boy! Hell yeah. Love to hear it, Sosa. Great list. Great, great list.
And recently, Sosa has watched House of 1,000 Corpses.
Woo!
Halloween Town.
Woo!
The Birds.
Woo!
And then Midnight Ruin.
Hell yeah. Thanks. This must have been October.
Yeah, thanks, pal. Appreciate it. Yeah, October. You're right. Oh, yeah, that's when we dropped it. All right, next up we got Evan Martorana. Just a musical theater performer that loves movies.
Evan comments a lot on social media.
Evan's great. All right, we got... Oh, this is a great pick. Singing in the Rain.
I'm singing in the rain.
It's probably the best musical ever made. I would say that. Then we got Hunchback of Notre Dame, the animated.
What a banger.
Beautiful film, too. Back to the Future.
Hell yeah. Haven't heard that one in a while.
Perfect one. Perfect one. And then Up.
Oh, man. I'm crying already.
And in October 2023, Evan watched The Nice Guys, Pirates, Let Me In, and Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
Philosopher. So like you said, flawless for...
Philosopher. Philosopher.
Philosopher.
Philosopher.
Philosopher.
Philosopher.
Philosopher.
Evan.
Velociraptor.
Evan, you're the man.
Evan's a film boy.
Film boy. All right, next up we got Julia Jensen.
Julia!
And... her husband, Seth.
Hey, guys.
Both are top fours. All right, ready? Let's go with Julia first. We got Oppenheimer.
Film girl.
Film girl! Silence of the Lambs.
Film girl.
Mittens.
What a pick.
Yeah.
What a pick.
My Neighbor Totoro.
Oh, Totoro.
And then, this is the film girl movie, Legally Blonde.
That's a film girl film right girl. There. Way to go, Julia. I love how Oppie's already in your four favorites.
Fantastic.
Love to hear it. But also, Silence of the Lambs, that is... a true cinephile's pick. That
oh
is
God.
A perfect movie. One of the best of all time.
One of my faves.
Wonder of the Big Five.
The Big Five.
Big Five.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
And Julia's husband, Seth, also a fan of the show. Who, oh, this is great. I'll do the reference after this. So first up, he's got Pulp Fiction.
Nice.
There'll Be Blood.
Nice.
Pan's Labyrinth.
Here we go.
And Almost Famous, Film Boy.
Film Boy. What a list.
Now, Seth and Julia actually have twin boys of their own.
Aw.
And they named their youngest son, Eli. Because of There Will Be Blood.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I'd love that. Something like that.
That's a great name, though. Yeah. Eli is a really good name. I like that a lot.
Eli's a fantastic name.
It's one of those names that it's been around for so long. It's still
forever.
Always relevant. It's been around for thousands of years.
It's never lost. It's never dropped from the top 50 all time.
It probably hasn't.
Ever.
It's probably.
Ever.
It's a terrific name. Eli Jensen. So that's their child's name.
It's a great name.
Eli Jensen. Great name.
Julia, Seth, thank you so much for sharing. And... hope you enjoy your twins. They're crazy when they're little.
Being film boy and film girl. We're the other best.
Great picks, too. Say hi to Eli and his brother for us. All right, next up, we got Ben Cook.
Ben.
If you were me, then I'd be you, and I'd use your body to get to the top. You can't stop me no matter who you are.
What movie is that quote from?
I don't know.
Doesn't say.
You stumped us, Ben. You stumped us. All the way from Perth, Australia. All right, first up, Ben's got Lord of the Rings. The Fellowship of the Ring.
That's nothing but heat right there. Nothing but heat.
We got some high heat here with The Prestige.
Oh, my God. Seth. I mean, sorry.
Ben.
Ben.
Unsubscribed.
I had Seth on the brain.
Unsubscribed.
Ben.
Then we got T2 Terminator.
Oh my
Judgment
God.
Judgment Day.
Ben! My Ben. Oh, my Ben.
Sounds like you're in bed with Ben. Ben. Oh my God, Ben.
No, it's South Park. My Ben. My Ben.
Taco flavor kisses. Taco flavor Ben.
Kisses. Oh, Ben.
I forgot about that one. And then Hook from Spielberg.
Wow. Ben, what are four favorites?
Fantastic.
I love
four.
The list.
Yeah.
Ben is a film boy.
And then
my Ben. My Ben. And then Ben watched Ninja Turtles, the animated film Mutant Mayhem.
Then X. Then Midnight Ruin. Then Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. Fun week right there.
Hell yeah.
Fun week.
The year of Ty West.
The year of Ty West, which has slipped into 2025.
2024.
Sorry. Yeah, not yet. All right, that's it for our Letterboxd top four for this week, everybody. And again, if you'd like to hear your top four read out on the show, be sure to screenshot us that top four on Letterboxd and then DM it to us on Instagram. We will add you to the list. We're almost caught up. We're getting there, man. We're getting there.
All right, Anthony, what else have you watched this week?
I watched Abigail.
Okay.
The vampire film.
I haven't seen it yet. How is it?
It's okay.
It's okay. Yeah. What would you give it for a rating?
My rating was 3 stars. And that was nice. A nice 3 stars. So, Abigail, it was actually a film I was very excited to see because I thought the trailer was fantastic. And the concept is really brilliant.
Yeah, it's basically a girl gets kidnapped, but they don't realize she's a vampire and they're locked in a building with her, right?
100% correct. You couldn't have said it better.
Thanks, man.
Than that. It was perfect phrasing.
Thanks.
And so I was like, this is a fucking great concept. I like Ready or Not a ton. And the duo, the directors, they're good. They're solid at horror. Now, the film has a lot of good things about it. I don't want to spoil too much, but I will just say it was a bit underwhelming. And it was kind of lacking, and it was just never really hit its potential. And ultimately, the film had some great cinematography, had some good gore, had a few laughs, a talented cast, but it just strayed away from its amazing idea and left me, and I think a lot of the audience, scratching our heads at the end of the film. And it was actually just ultimately kind of a disappointment of a watch. I think that super big horror fans like me will find things to enjoy about the film. Ultimately, it's actually quite slow. It really took about 40 minutes, no lie, for things to really get cooking.
40 minutes?
Things should have started to hit the fan within 20 minutes.
I need an appetizer by then, man.
There was like a little garnish before then, but that was it. And so the movie, you could have shaved off easily could have shaved off 20 minutes from the first act, without a doubt. And the film would have actually been better. It was a little too little too late when it did start cooking. But I will say the actress who played the vampire is fantastic. She is the best performance in the movie. And there's a lot of great actors in that movie. And she just killed it. So I think she's going to have a big, bright future in Hollywood. Really talented young lady. And the rest of the cast did an okay job. It was good. It was pretty good. But I think that they focused too much on blood. It was just too much blood for really no reason. And then it just felt in a lot of ways like a copy and paste from Ready or Not, their previous film, in a lot of ways.
Well, I really, really, really like Ready or Not.
Yeah.
Now, what was it, the structure that made it feel like Ready or Not?
It was a combination of the structure. I mean, obviously, it's set in one location, trapped in a house. But now, rather than one person being hunted by a group, it's a group being hunted by one.
Because Ready or Not, it's a big house. It's yes. Also sort of an estate and yeah. a compound,
this
right?
Is a, this yeah. is kind of a big house, not... They're locked inside, but it's still very big, lots of rooms.
Okay.
But in terms of the way people died, and then also in terms of the ending, it was just way too close for comfort for being, in a lot of ways, brothers to that film.
Mm-hmm.
Way too much. And so I left the theater just kind of being like, they kind of made the same movie, and it wasn't as entertaining. And for a vampire movie, it wasn't really that vampire-y.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get much lore. We didn't get much vampire, that many vampire kills. And ultimately, I think the cast just kind of didn't have much to do. I think that fans will like it, but it's not doing that great. It's a 3.2 on Letterboxd. It's getting decent reviews on IMDb, an okay audience score. It's doing better with Rotten Tomatoes audience score than anywhere else, but I just walked out of that theater, and I think the audience too with me. There's a couple moments where I could hear audible laughter at the actual scene when it wasn't trying to be funny. It was funny, and it was just got a little too ridiculous, and ultimately it abandoned what was making it really good. So there was something that was making it really great, and they were building on it, and then they just were like, "Let's not do that anymore. We're gonna actually flip the switch and reverse it, scratch that, reverse it, Willy Wonka style," and they did something else, and it didn't work. And so that ultimately ended up being like, really, this is the direction you guys went. It's kind of odd. And so I think for Vampire, I was like hoping this would be like a top tier vampire movie, and it just wasn't. It was good. It was pretty fun for some moments, but ultimately just lacking.
Bummer.
It was a bummer, yeah.
Because it's an awesome setup. And like you said, it's a really good trailer.
It was one of those movies where you, like halfway through the film, I was like, oh man, this is not what I was hoping it was going to be. Like I was thinking that in my head. And that's not a good sign.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was the people who made Ready or Not. And it's a bummer to hear that it's basically the same structure.
I'm not going to give much away, but there are a lot of things other than just the plot structure and setup that have identical things to Ready or Not.
True. All right. Well, I guess if you want to check that out, everyone, check out Abigail.
My review was 3 stars. And I wrote, I tapped out when Melissa Barrera raised her fist and said, let's have some fun to a vampire.
That sounds like it's Morbin time.
It was like that. I swear, that was one of the moments where the crowd was like, what the fuck?
Let's have some fun.
It's like she raised her fist like to fight a vampire. And I was like, what? Oh my God, it's a vampire.
All right, let's move on to my next watch, which you watched as well, because we did an episode on this. And I'm talking about the 1999 classic starring Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz from Stephen Sommer, The Mummy.
Mummy.
Which is one of the best action-adventure films of the last 50 years, and my God, what a picture. I had so much fun revisiting this movie after a while, and then doing an episode on it was something we've always wanted to do in terms of a solo episode. We've dabbled in The Mummy before and talked about in the past with other films combined, but it was so fun to revisit it and analyze it and break it down and just enjoy it from a solo perspective of just doing an episode covering it by itself, because it's a really terrific movie. It is timeless. In 50 years, we're going to be watching The Mummy, and we're still going to be like, man, remember when this came out? Like, I miss it. Oh, my God. What a film. What a picture. They don't make them like this anymore. They sure don't. The practical effects are awesome. The stunt work is great. The shootouts, the explosions, the fights, the fire burns, the action, the romance is there, baby. The romance is there. I love me a happy Hollywood ending. I love me a kiss at the end, too. Give me that anytime. I don't care what anyone says. It makes me feel warm and gooey inside. And I think that's one of the reasons why people love The Mummy so much, and they revisited it over and over again since their childhood. It's nostalgic. It, you know, puts you in a happy place. And I adore The Mummy so much. And goodness, I gave this 4.5 stars because it's excellent.
I gave it 4.5 stars as well. And actually, when I went to see Abigail, I was there quite early. And I heard The Mummy playing in a screen nearby because the door had been left open. And it was just pouring into the hallway. And I was like, let me just go take a peek. And I actually stood in the side entrance and watched The Mummy for 15 minutes. And it looked great on a big screen.
Yeah.
It looked really fantastic. It really crisp, and the remaster was great. And it just, even the CGI looked very good.
I was heading into the theater for the next movie I'll bring up after when it's my turn. And the ending of The Mummy was sounded, and the doors opened up. I could hear that beautiful theme. And people started pouring it. I'm like, I'm so jealous you guys just watched this in the theater right now. But I saw another sick re-release. But let's move on to your next watch.
Oh, but real quick. Okay. So I peeked into the theater. So it was a walkway ramp. And then there's a huge wall where the seating is. The
stadium seating.
Stadium seating is. So nobody saw me. But I peeked over it. And I saw, it was really sweet. I saw like a bunch of fit families. So people our age with kids.
Fit families?
Bunch of families. A bunch of families.
Sorry, you said fit families.
I stuttered.
I'm like, what's a fit family?
You know, they're really fit, you know?
I was going to say.
No, just families. And they looked like they were our age with like young kids. And so it was
really, like millennial parents.
Yeah, exactly. So it looked like families, parents were showing them kids the film for the first time in a theater.
That they grew up with.
Yeah, exactly. And I saw like a couple kids just like, they were whispering to their parents. They seemed really into it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was nice. I was like, aw, I would do the same thing.
Spread cinema to the kids.
Yeah, those fit families, man.
Get canceled saying something like that, Anthony.
All right, my next watch is a film we're going to be doing an episode on very soon. And that is The Usual Suspects. I hadn't seen it for a few years, and man, it still works. It slaps. Christopher McQuarrie wrote this film way back in 1995, and he's gone on now to direct recent Mission Impossible movies, Jack Reacher. He's just a phenomenal writer. I think he's one of Hollywood's best, which is why Tom has basically taken him into his orbit for all of his films that he makes, because McQuarrie makes them better, whether it be doing a rewrite on Top Gun Maverick or doing a rewrite on Edge of Tomorrow. McQuarrie's a really fantastic, phenomenal screenwriter who understands how to tell a story really well. And this is an example of how brilliant he was at 30 years ago. The Usual Suspects is such a great contemporary noir. I said it correctly, didn't I?
You said noir correct.
I said it correctly.
You got it, guys. It took 4 weeks.
Fantastic cast. Incredible. Kevin Spacey is phenomenal. Gabriel Byrne. Stephen Baldwin in his best role. Kevin Pollak. Benicio Del Toro. Chaz Palminteri. Pete Postlethwaite. Giancarlo Esposito's in this movie, yeah. Which I forgot. A bunch of great actors.
He's the cop.
Really exciting filmmaking and writing. And it's one of those mystery movies where if you don't know the twist, it just, on your first watch, this movie is just mind-blowing. And it's so well done. It's a perfect thriller. It's a perfect mystery. It's got some great action. Ultimately, it's the characters and it's the screenplay that really make this film special. It's an all-timer, and I gave this a 4.5 stars out of 5.
It's so camp, too,
yeah.
In the best ways, in terms of knowing what it is, being sort of meta, and also having fun with the genre. It's really campy.
It's very 90s.
Yeah, and like pissing on the flame in the beginning is just so funny. It's like, who thinks of that? Who does that? It's just so funny. Put the fucking money in the bag. Put the money in the bag.
The money in the bag.
Fuck yourself.
Benicio's hilarious.
Can't wait to do an episode on this next week. I'm ecstatic.
Yeah, I can't wait to break it down in depth, because watching it last night, I was just like, oh my God, this is so good. This is brilliant. So brilliant.
All right. My final watch of the week was another re-release that came out last weekend. One of my all-time favorites. I went and saw Alien in theaters. I believe it was the first time I've seen it in theaters, but probably the 25th time I watched the film. And I'm telling you, when you see a movie like that in theaters that you love, you've seen a dozen times or more, you see new things, and you're also anticipating your favorite moments even more. Like when Ripley enters the escape pod and the shuttle. And obviously, if you know where to look, you can see the alien super early in that scene while she's disrobing and then just kind of getting the settings going. But you can see the alien very early before she bumps into it.
Just chilling.
Hanging it. But man, it's so fun. It's so exciting, and I love so much of it. And the chest burster scene was... It was like seeing it for the first time. It was really exciting. I was like mouth agape during that scene, even though I've seen it 50 times.
Yeah.
But it's just seeing it on a big screen like that is just so much better with the sound design and everything in the theater. And the score from Jerry Goldsmith, I've never heard it that well before in with a movie experience, because obviously being in a theater. And it was cool because they had the trailer for Alien Romulus before, and then they had a sit-down Q&A between Romulus director Fede Alvarez and Ridley Scott. Basically, Fede was picking Ridley Scott's brain, which is really interesting to see and hear, and hear Fede's perspective of why he wanted to make the film, how he made it, what he was hoping to do, what he was hoping to achieve, as well as the advice he got from Ridley. Ridley was great, but also he's Ridley Scott. He looks like he didn't want to be there at the same time, but he was answering all of Fede's questions really well. And we got a little perspective I've never heard of the production of Alien from Ridley, in terms of how it got made, how it didn't get made, how he discovered Sigourney Weaver, which he's in the interview, he said that he was looking for an actress and Warren Beatty phoned him up one day. And he's like, Ridley, you got to check out this girl. She's off Broadway right now. Her name's Sigourney Weaver. You got to go check out her performance. And that's how he found Sigourney Weaver. So she was off Broadway doing a play. And that's where Ridley went and saw her perform that play based off Warren Beatty's recommendation, who had seen the play and thought she was terrific. And that's how Ellen Ripley, Sigourney Weaver, is from Warren Beatty suggesting her to Ridley Scott.
Oh my God.
So that was really cool to learn from Ridley about the casting process of such an integral role, and also one of the most memorable roles and characters in the history of science fiction and movies in general. So it was really cool to get that perspective of one of my all-time favorite movies, but just seeing it on a massive screen in a loud theater and, you know, eating a bunch of popcorn while doing it, and just having just one of my favorite cinematic experiences in the last year or two. It was just a terrific night, and I was so happy I got to revisit. I hope people revisited that as well as if they saw The Mummy. But man, Alien, it was between The Mummy and Alien for me, and I went and saw The Alien instead.
How did they cast the Xenomorph? So the xenomorph was actually working at a gas station. Now, what happened was he got fired because he accidentally blew it up. His acid blood dripped into one of the gas tanks. And so there's a lot of controversy. It was a small town in Iowa named Benton. And so that's where they found out and they saw this. Oh, this guy looks like an alien.
Like negligence explosion, man. That acid blood.
The acid blood.
They shouldn't even have hired him with that acid blood.
He's got a terrific defense mechanism. Yeah. You don't dare kill him. Man, that movie's so goddamn good. Another timeless film.
Was the audience, was it crowded?
It's full theater.
Full theater.
Yeah, full theater.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
That's why, like, because Mummy wasn't quite packed, but I did go middle of the day. So yeah. That's probably why.
Yeah, I went to a 7 p.m. screening at City Walk.
Uh-huh.
Terrific theater. And it was a packed theater. I think I was the most excited because I screamed before the movie started and I screamed when the movie ended.
Oh, like during the opening credits?
Yeah, I was like, woo! Yeah, I was ecstatic. I tried to get an applause going.
But nothing.
Nothing happened.
Everyone's like, shut up, fucking asshole.
But it was this AMC has great, it's not the Dolby Theater, but they have these great leather recliners. They're massive. They get you to the point where you are literally
lying down.
Horizontal. You're lying down. So I try not to go in that setting, but when the movie was over, I'm like, dude, I could go to bed right now. I'm so comfortable. Like, too comfortable to watch a movie.
I don't like going back all the way on those.
Me neither.
I just like going a little bit. I'll do a little
it's
bit.
It's too horizontal.
It's too horizontal.
You're going to fall asleep.
Yeah, for real. And it's just like, then you're chin down the whole time.
So comfortable, yeah. Though. My God, man. Those seats are great.
It's tough with glasses on, lying down like that and watching a film, because you got to like tilt your head up a certain way for your frames to not be, so your frames are covering your eyesight. So I never lie back all the way, but. I know what theater you're talking about.
Yeah, it was a great experience. I went with a friend and we had so much fun.
What was something new that you had never seen before in that?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I wouldn't say it's something new that I'd never seen before, but I think it's just minute details in the production design for me specifically, because I've always adored the production design of that movie, but really when you see it on the big screen, you can see the details of it like I'd never seen it before in a lot of ways, especially inside the spacecraft that had crash landed on that planet where the beacon, the signal comes from. And
the space jockey interior.
Yeah, that too. But really, I think more of the tunnels and things like that. But when you see it on a screen that big, and I've watched this movie on my projector, but I've just never seen it in a theater. It just immerses you in it like you've never seen it before.
Sure.
And I think for me, that's what it would be. Just the little details in the production design that you can't really get when you watch, even on a big TV at home, but you have to be in a massive theater or cinema where it's freaking 40 feet tall and you really can get that kind of perspective. I think that's probably what it was for me.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
It just felt like a new experience.
I'd really like to see Gladiator in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
I'd really like to do that sometime. I haven't seen Alien in theaters.
It was awesome, dude. Mm-hmm. It's still in theaters right now.
Maybe I'll go see it because I saw Abigail Instead and I was like, fuck, I should. And while I was in, while I was watching,
like, I could have been seeing Alien.
While I was watching Abigail, I was like, fuck, I could have gone to Alien. I was literally thinking that. I was like, I could have been to Alien. And it wasn't a noisy crowd, but there weren't even that many people there, but I actually had to move my seat, and it wasn't their fault. I didn't, like, they weren't talking or anything, but like they were like five people sat behind me and they were being so loud with their like plastic straws and cups and food and wrappers, and they were right behind me, and I was like, I can't do this. So I went across the theater like a row up and like 10 rows over.
Bro, we were at Fall Guy last night, right? Uh-huh. And to my right, there was an empty seat, and after that was this lady who sat down, and the movie had not started yet. And movie trailers, everyone sees these trailers 1,000 times. So yeah. I chit-chat during the movie theaters if I'm with my
That's
friends.
Fine, yeah.
I was with two friends. We were chit-chatting during the trailers. We weren't being super loud or anything. The trailers are so incredibly loud anyways. We're in a massive IMAX theater. So we're just chatting. We're like, we're so excited for this movie. And we were just like cracking jokes and like hanging out because of during the trailer. You talk about, oh, the trailer looks terrible. The trailer looks good. You know, that kind of thing. And then the Nicole Kidman ad comes up, and I'm like, you guys ready? Let's go. So we're so amped. And the lady to my right goes, excuse me, are you going to be talking during the movie?
Oh, my God.
I'm like, what? She's like, I'm like, no, it's a trailer. We're just chatting during the trailer. We're just excited about the movie. She's like, all right, can we make sure we check our volumes because everyone's staring at you right now. And she said that louder than us. We were like kind of mumbling it all to each other.
Oh, my God.
And then
God.
I was like, it's the Nicole Kidman ad that you've probably seen
100
times.
Everybody claps during it.
That's what I said to her. Yeah. I said, I'm like, this is literally the Nicole Kidman ad that you've probably seen 100 times. It's okay. And no, we're not going to talk during the trailer.
During the film, yeah.
And then she left before the movie ended, too, like before the end credits and everything.
Oh, my God.
So it was just so odd because it's trailers, guys. Like, you can talk during trailers. It's no big deal.
It's 10 movie trailers.
It's the Nicole Kidman ad.
Dude, whenever
it was the new AMC ad before Nicole Kidman.
Oh, yeah.
They have a new one. It's like four goddamn minutes. Yeah. We were talking during that. And then the Nicole Kidman ad. And I'm like, it's the AMC commercials. The movie hasn't even started yet.
Yeah.
We haven't even had the IMAX trailer yet, which comes next.
Yeah.
I'm like, listen, I don't talk during movies, but I'm just with my friends. We're very excited to talk. And also, you just told two stunt people, my friends, to be quiet during a movie about stunt people. You fucking asshole.
Oh, my God. That's wild.
The movie hadn't even started yet.
The movie hadn't even started. And the Nicole Kidman ad, in most screenings, people still clap and laugh during it.
They scream during it. They scream and people clap are like, and cheer. Woo!
Like, that's just, it's just become a thing. It's like.
And the thing is, no one was looking at us. They were all looking at her.
Yeah.
Because it was a theater. People were chit-chatting everywhere.
I think it's totally fine to quietly talk during trailers. No problem.
Yeah. And it was the
trailers
AMC,
is fine.
It was the AMC ad.
Yeah.
The new one they have. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
It's like four goddamn minutes.
Yeah, it's a long one. They tell you all the information. They also cleared up what the memberships are finally. they never used to really explain what the memberships were. Now they're like, they spent a minute on the memberships, but.
I couldn't believe it, man.
Yeah. It's actually a good ad. It's much better than their old one.
It's pretty good. It's all right. It's a little corny, but it's still good.
I like the corniness of it.
The guy's voice in it is insane. Yeah. It's like the greatest trailer voice I've ever heard in my life.
Become a member of Stubbs.
Yeah, that
become
guy.
Become a member of the A-list.
The A-list. And welcome. Thank you for coming to AMC.
I honestly, no lie, I prefer that over Nicole Kidman ad now.
The Nicole one, they redid some of the
audio.
I don't
like the new dialogue. It's like sound that I can feel.
It's something else. They changed. Yeah. I can't remember what it was, but it's different dialogue from when they shot that spot.
No, yeah. She added a couple of lines. I don't like the lines.
I don't like it either.
Yeah.
They should have just kept it. But still, it was during those two trailers that this lady said this to us, and we were just like, I was flabbergasted.
Yeah.
Because I don't talk during movies. That's the thing. I'm like, the movie hasn't even fucking started. Am I supposed to, as soon as I sit down in the theater, during the 10 trailers at AMC, not say a fucking word? Is that movie etiquette? It's absolutely not movie etiquette.
Yeah.
It's absolutely not. Unless you're at like the New Bev or someone very specific where they tell you not to talk during the trailers because they're unique experiences. Mm-hmm. No, I'm going to talk during the fucking Minions movie. It's going
to
be okay.
She should have said something. It would have been fine for her to say something if you guys were doing that during the start of the film.
Didn't even have.
Yeah. Not then even it's okay, close. But like, it didn't even start.
The movie
yet.
Didn't start for 2 minutes later.
Yeah.
After she said that.
Unreal.
I think she just wanted to yell at someone.
I think she's a very unhappy person. She was like, imagine what was going on in her mind the whole time listening to you guys talk. How dare they have fun and enjoy each other's company?
We were having such a good night.
Was she alone?
Yeah, she was alone.
Okay, makes sense. She's going to die alone. Just kidding.
I hope so.
Well, I'm glad you had a nice time after that altercation. After you got in that fight with that woman.
But I literally said, it's the Nicole Kidman ad. You've seen this 100 times. It's okay. We're not going to talk during the movie. Like, seriously.
Was she right next to you?
Two seats over.
Oh, man.
I had such a fun time, though, afterward. Like, I didn't even give a fuck. I brushed that off. I pretend like she didn't exist anymore.
She was probably boiling.
Probably.
Man. Well, I'm glad you stuck up for yourself.
I mean, it's...
I'm glad you beat up that old lady. She deserved it. Watch out, old ladies. James will beat you up.
I never said old lady. You said old lady. I said lady.
She just sounds like an old lady. All right. I have another film that I watched called Jane Eyre, which came out in 2011, directed by Cary Joji Fukunaga, the fantastic director, starring Michael Fassbender and Mia Wasikowska, as well as Jamie Bell. Really terrific cast. And this is one of Fukunaga's early films before he made True Detective, which really blew him up. But this is an example of his incredible ability as a storyteller, his visual flair, and his just language as a filmmaker. It's being top tier. And this was a role Fassbender did shortly after Inglourious Basterds, and he crushes it. Mia Wasikowska is the lead, and she's phenomenal as Jane Eyre. Jamie Bell is very good as well as St. John. It's a beautiful film.
It's some of the most stunning cinematography in a period piece I've ever seen still to this day. Beautiful score from Dario Marianelli. He's just one of the best composers, especially for historical fiction. There's just something about his music, the string work or the piano work, whatever he focuses on. There's something about his writing and his composition that so suits historical fiction, like Atonement, like Pride and Prejudice, like Jane Eyre. And overall, it's a really stunning production. Minimalist filmmaking. I like how a lot of the interiors in this film, they're lit by candlelight and really just candlelight and very minimal artificial lights at all. So Vasa Kalisko will be holding a candle, and that's really the only light in the entire room. And barely her face is lit up, and there's you just see the bloom of that small candle on the wall, and the rest of the image is very dark. So they did an amazing job of immersing you into the world with the lighting and cinematography. There's also some really great handheld cinematography that pulls you into the filmmaking and into the story that you don't see too often in period pieces, but I think it works really well in this film, especially with some of the more dramatic and chaotic moments of the story. It's an interesting story. It's one that is shrouded in mystery, and it's one that feels like a horror film a bit, which I really like. And if you've never seen the film before, there is a bit of a twist that really makes it a very powerful film. That's why the story's lived on for over two centuries. That's why it's been adapted so many freaking times. This is one of many film adaptations. There's been lots of TV film adaptations and TV series. It's a very famous story, obviously. And this is my favorite adaptation that I've seen of them. I've probably seen three or four of them, but this one by Fukunaga is really phenomenal. And he's just one of my favorite directors working today. Whether it be this, whether it be True Detective, the most recent Bond film.
Dude, No Time to Die is so good.
It's such a beautiful film,
too. So well made.
It's so well crafted.
From a filmmaking perspective,
yeah,
Carrey's one of the best right now.
I think he really is, and he's someone that isn't really talked about as much as some other filmmakers, and I'm not really sure why.
He's only really done one big blockbuster, if you think about it, in terms of like a household film, in terms of, obviously everyone's seen True Detective, but no one knows who made that, I feel like. If he's
casual people,
yeah, but he's not. And then he did the Netflix series.
He did Maniac. That probably took 2 years to make.
And that was an awesome show.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of big films, big blockbusters outside of No Time to Die, I don't think he has any other really big ones that would make him a household name.
And so he made Beasts of No Nation, which was an early Netflix film in 2015.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was an amazing film.
Because that was an Oscar-nominated movie.
No.
Wasn't it?
It should have been.
I thought
but
it was.
But it was an early Netflix original, and this was a time when the Academy didn't really want Netflix to be out there in terms of accolades. And so it was a film that if Beasts of No Nation came out any time in the last 5 years, it would have gotten so much attention award season. Because remember Idris Elba didn't even get nominated for that?
Yeah.
And he's absolutely incredible in it. So that was a film because it was an early Netflix original film. People were like, oh, it's a Netflix movie. Oh, we don't want to nominate that, or we can't take it that seriously. And I think it never hit the potential that it had. I mean, it's only got 6,000 reviews on Letterboxd, Beasts of No Nation, and it's a really wonderful, wonderful movie. And so Fukunaga, I think that maybe, and he's done Masters of the Air, which is really incredibly well made. He directed the first three episodes of that, and it's just like he set them up for success with that show. It's so well crafted, those few episodes, and he really gave them the language going forward for the rest of the season. And it's just a beautiful looking series. So I think that maybe doing so much TV has maybe prevented audiences from truly recognizing him as a film director and a household name director in a way. But he really is one of the best of his generation, one of the best working today. I think that going forward, his career is one that I'm just always so interested in whatever he's doing. So, and this is Jane Eyre is an example of that. And he's just a one of a kind filmmaker, in my opinion.
Absolutely. All right, what else? Did you watch anything else?
I watched... That was it. Those are my watches.
Those are your watches. All right.
Cool. Yeah.
Very cool.
Interesting week. Very interesting week. But I would say my favorite watch of the week was Challengers. So much fun. Such a cool movie.
All right. Well, thank you so much for tuning into this week's Letterboxd Recap. Make sure to tune into those recent episodes like The Mummy we did on Monday, as well as on Wednesday. We did an episode on, what do we do?
On Wednesday?
Yeah.
The 70 best movies of the 1970s.
That was a banger.
Great
as
episode.
Well, next week, like we said, we're doing The Usual Suspects, as well as we'll figure out like a movie draft or something to do, which is going to be a lot of fun.
And then I'm going to England on Wednesday.
And so we're going to film a couple episodes in bulk, and then we're going to test and start working with remote podcasting. So either I'll be somewhere remotely or Anthony will be in England, and we're still going to record together, but over the oceans, across the oceans.
I don't expect us to miss any episodes.
We're not going to miss any episodes.
Yeah, we'll be everything will be according to schedule, and we'll just be on different continents.
Yeah, we will be. But thank you again for tuning in. Be sure to become a patron today at patreon.com/Raiders of the Lost Podcast. Leave those 5-star ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And see you next time.
Take care. See you next time.
I took it.
James stole my line.
Server. Take care.
See you next time. We got it.
Raiders of the Lost Podcast is a Mirror Image production. Sound mixing done by Jacob Kosler. Opening music by Chase Jackson.